This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour two, about 5 minutes in. Fun visit with Marcus Hirsch, who gave us plenty of action, and Steve Anderson is going to crossbreed, supply us about the Los Al weekend. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. It's going to be a fun one. There's lots to look forward to, both in the afternoons and evenings at Los Alamitos in the next couple of days.
Well, certainly the Starlet, and then in fact in the meet preview piece that you put together, you talked about the 2-year-old nature of these couple of weeks before Santa Anita gets started, and they got to be happy with this Starlet. Sometimes it's tough to round up at this time of year. It's tough to round up enough horses to make it interesting. I'm not sure what the prospects are for next week. A couple of the names that you can touch on, but let's dive right into the thoroughbred side and talk about the Starlet tomorrow.
Well, like you say, it did draw a decent field, and one of the things that does boost the race is its status as a Grade One, so that helps as a lure because of its prestige. And I think it's more than just a Bob Baffert race this year. I mean, he's done so well in it, winning it the last five times, and can certainly do so again. That filly, Faiza, that won her maiden at Del Mar back in November, certainly has the ability to move forward and handle the mile in the 16th distance. But remember that an Uncontrollable was also supplemented to this field for $10,000, as Faiza was. It was a good second of the Chandelier Stakes, the Grade 2 at Santa Anita in early October, and was considered for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies until pre-entries were taken, were due, and they did not put her in there because she had sustained a cut in the Chandelier and hadn't really recovered to the satisfaction of Mike McCarthy. So she's been regrouped, had a nice series of works in November, and comes into this race, with pretty good credentials too. Pride of the Niles won at a mile, and doing it the hard way, the Baffert filly that starts from the rail was second to Ice Dancing in a maiden race in late November at a mile at Del Mar. But I think Ice Dancing is a nice filly who'll be in the discussion of the major 3-year-old filly stakes at Santa Anita in the early months of the year. So there's some credentials across the board in the Starlet, not just Faiza, and really not just Uncontrollable. There's a few others in there that look like they might have a say in the outcome.
That doing it the hard way, Marcus actually touched on the Starlet for part of his game plan approach, and I had not really looked at this filly. She's a maiden, and yet she's really done very little wrong with the 2 seconds and the third. I mean, from a fig standpoint, feels like she's a progressive type, and she stepped up a little bit in that November start at Del Mar, two and a half weeks ago. And another step forward. I mean, she's right there with Blessed Touch and Faiza.
Yeah, and you add that to the fact that Ice Dancing was heavily favored to win that maiden race. And at the top of the stretch, it was kind of a little bit uncertain for a few strides as to which of those was going to prevail. So in that sense, I was left impressed by doing it the hard way, thinking, well, I'm going to have to watch this for the next maiden race, never thinking that she would, at the time, that he was going to give her a tougher assignment in the Starlet. So give her a chance for an exact or a trifecta. I think that's where she really belongs in the discussion, more so than a potential trip to the winner's circle. But certainly feel like she's got that kind of ability to play a role in the race.
You know what's interesting about, I'm always intrigued when you see a field like this, that this time of year, 2-year-olds, nobody here has more than 4 starts. Fast and Shiny with the, well, I take that back. Classy Mademoiselle has 6.
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, but mostly, mostly 3-start types, and Faiza coming off the maiden win. There's not a preponderance of pace setting types in here at all.
No, there's not. I wouldn't be surprised if Blessed Touch is pretty close. For example, she's got some skills that look like she could be, somewhat involved, and she did draw wide. So they're going to want to get her involved in the race, I think, to avoid a wide trip. Because remember, that first turn at Los Al is considerably sharper than that wide, leaping second turn. So the thing about the first turn at Los Al, because when the course was redeveloped, expanded, in the winter of 13-14, they had to make some compromises to fit the property. And So it's almost, not to say European, but it's almost a little quirky. It's not a uniform track like we're used to these cookie cutter 1 mile or mile and an eighth tracks that we see across the United States. So in that sense, the track plays a little differently than some two-turn races. They play a little bit differently for the riders as they go into that first turn. They have to be careful not to wind up four wide, particularly in such an important race. So in that sense, it does have a little bit of a difference to it. And, you know, Blessed Touch did win her maiden from the front, which she earned a 90 buyer and did so very well, and was 44.56 seconds to the half mile that day. So she's got, I think, as a one that could be out there. So if she goes out there, now the race complexion is kind of known, and you'll see, you know, Uncontrollable will be at the back. You can just figure that straight away. But I think Faiza will be pretty handy. She's got good speed, too. She'll be pretty handy for Flavia and Pratt.
It's a good group. There's, bless you, there's upside. And you know, there's a horse like this, Pride of the Nile, and I understand, you know, I certainly understand the O'Neill / Mora team trying this Pioneer of the Nile filly on the dirt. Why not? Coming off the maiden win and an allowance win, going a mile on the grass. So she's certainly a two-turn type, was a Stone Street bred.
Right.
West Coast Stables. This is obviously a horse that, you know, look forward to next year, whether she ends up being a dirt filly or a turf filly. And then there's the McCarthy, too. I mean, I know some people are down on the Chandelier, but the McCarthy filly's okay.
No, she's just fine. And, you know, keep in mind, her turn of foot is electric if needed. When she broke her maiden on opening week at Del Mar back in July, she looked beaten. And then she came up the outside with a very nice run through the stretch to win a 5-furlong race for state bred maidens. And then just a little bit more than 2 months later, she's second in a grade two and well clear of Justique, who came back to win the Desi Arnaz Stakes so attractively in November. So maybe let's hold off on our long-term criticism of the Chandelier until we give these runners another race or two and try not to draw a knee-jerk reaction to it. No, it wasn't the fastest horse race ever run. Let's be clear. But and then Tell Me No Lies didn't perform very well, really, in the Breeders' Cup. I think she finished eighth in the Juvenile Fillies. But so in that regard, that didn't help the form too much. But let's give Uncontrollable full marks for this forthcoming race because I think she has a chance to prove herself as a mile and a 16th type filly and could produce a small surprise at 4-1 on the morning line too.
The Starlet, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, goes as the nightcap. There's a couple other spots on the card, actually. There's the maiden group goes as the seventh. It starts the late pick three. And there's a couple of lightly raced types, a couple of firsters, or actually three firsters. And just kind of perusing this, McCarthy's got Navy Man for the Warrens, a $475,000 Bolt Doro, who ran into Arabian Lion on the debut and then was just beaten by Massimo. Gilmore in here for Baffert, third in that race, Massimo, Navy Man, and Gilmore. That this one, a Twirling Candy, stretching out as well from six. That for SF and the big partnership group. I think we got to always look these days now at Bruce Kretz and George Papa Padromo, who have really shouldered their way, you know, into a lot of pictures.
Yeah, with American Theorem and Cabo Spirit, and then so they've done quite well with some very important horses over the course of the season. And another guy who sometimes does well with second race maidens is Bluegrass. I'm sorry, is Keith DeSorbo, who trains Bluegrass Lute, who was fifth of seven in the same race as Navy Man and Gilmore. But sometimes those Keith DeSorbo runners do kind of thrive with their second starts, and it is very nice to see that he is riding his brother, Kent,
there
on this
go.
Race. And I believe, I have to triple-check it, but I believe that's the first time they've been a tandem since Kent's return to riding last month. So in that sense, kind of a reassuring thing to see. But for the, quite frankly, Navy Man and Gilmore look very, very attractive. They both ran good races to be second and third in the same six-furlong November 13th race. They're stretching out. They're patient. They seem to be patient horses. They're not, you know, speedballs, for example. So the two-turn circumstance should work. Navy Man by Bolt D'Oro, $475,000 yearly, whilst Gilmore, $250,000 yearly by by twirling candy. So two colts that, you know, might be in the notebook in the February-March period just as much as they're in the focus of for Saturday afternoon.
Two-year-olds, as Steve wrote in his meet advance, the big, you know, the big part of these couple of weeks at Los Alamitos. What does it look like for next week for the Futurity?
It looks like Arabian Lion is going to be among Baffert's runners, and he said he probably would have three in there when I spoke to him about it at Del Mar a few days ago. So we'll have to wait and see how many others take him on. I'm sure that Devin Neal will have a runner, and others like McCarthy might have something as well. I would imagine a field of five or six. Baffert will seemingly have a very strong hold, and he should be, have a very strong hold, because his two-year-olds have been outstanding this year, even if they didn't win the Breeders' Cup. But he's had a really deep team, and he's, you know, of course, let's be honest here. If you had 15 first-round draft choices when you go to the sale, you'd be on a loaded, have a loaded team too. But the horses are performing, and they really have a lot of depth to them. So he can, you know, think about now how he wants to, you know, manage those horses as well as some of the ones we've seen. And then all the while, you've got Cave Rock still waiting to come back from his loss in the Breeders' Cup, but coming up early in the new year too. So. But the typical Baffert team, very deep, very strong.
Have not looked at the Sunday action. Anything to note on Sunday?
Oh, a really nice little small. It didn't draw a big field, but the Soviet Problem Stakes has a pretty solid field of two-year-old state bred fillies going a mile. And I think that you know, we're going to see cast member, a nice filly trained by Tim Yakteen for George Krikorian, who's unbeaten in two starts, tries the mile for the first time in the feature race that day. So that's going to be kind of fascinating in and of itself. There's a nice mile turf race a month from now at Santa Anita that is under consideration for her, should she perform well at a mile in this race. So we'll have to wait and see how that kind of turns out. That's the big thoroughbred race, but believe me, it's all just, you know, the hors d'oeuvre for the evening programs.
Here we go.
2 days. There's no two ways around it. I mean, listen, the Starlet's grade one, it's top class racing, and it will be very exciting to watch how that race unfolds. But no, I'm sorry, man, it's all about 4 hours later.
All right. Well, they like a day-night doubleheader at Fenway Park, the old the Tom Yawkey style. Clear them out and let's get a new admission. The $750,000 Champion of Champions, which will close out the night card, 9:18 Pacific. So after midnight, and actually, you know what? The timing is good if you want all day action, because that'll feed right into Hong Kong, pretty well.
And you can stay at Los Al. You don't have to leave and come back. You can just hang out if you really want to watch the whole matinee and then hang around. I don't know that there has ever been a better horse race at Los Alamitos than what will happen on Saturday.
Wow.
I have been watching the Champion of Champions for 33 years. I missed the first 17, and I'm a little mad at myself for that. But in terms of watching in person, but I can tell you that this is looked upon as probably the best running of the race in its history. This is its 50th running. There was a couple of runnings in the heyday of the oil market in the early 80s that were bonkers races. These are quarter horses with combined earnings of more than $9 million. And it's a four-horse race, more or less. And it's hard to stand or sit here right now and say with any conviction which of those four can win, because I think they all have very good chances. Bomb Cyclone is the star three-year-old. He won the Super Derby last month at 400 yards. He has won convincingly at 440. So he can get the distance. Danger is the 2021 world champion. He's done this year is win four out of five and win four consecutive starts at 440, a true specialist at the distance. Some people might argue that he hasn't faced the best horses compared to some of the others, but a really nice runner nonetheless. You look farther into the field. Apolitical Pants has a chance to join Refrigerator as the only three-time runner of the race. Refrigerator won the race from 92 to 94 and was second in the 91 run. And Apolitical Pence is unbeaten in five starts this year. He'll go as the 2-1 morning line favorite, but it'll be fun to watch the betting, see what goes on. And Impressum has drawn the outside. He is a dynamite gelding. He was the champion three-year-old last year when he won races such as the Rainbow Derby, Texas Classic Derby, and the Ruidoso Derby. And this year he's won three out of five starts. He was second to Apolitical Pence in a very good running of the Low South Championship on October 8th when Apolitical Pence flew away from the start, even by quarter horse standards, and just won the race in the first 100 yards. I watched it from the gap near the paddock, about 100 yards from the wire, and Apolitical Pence had sealed the win by then. He was too far in front. But what Impressum did in the last 75 to 80 yards was remarkable. He really caught up as much as he could to his rival, and was only beaten three quarters of a length. After the race, Heath Taylor scolded himself in a small way, saying he let the horse have a little bit too much weight on him in the 6 weeks since he'd won his previous start at the end of August. And I asked Taylor a couple of days ago for an article in Racing Form, had Impressum tightened up a little bit, and, you know, was he a little more fit now than he was the 1st of October? And he said yes. Impressum has drawn the outside. He's the 5-2 morning line second choice. I think that's going to be a fair price if he can get it. I expect him to win. I think he's just got a slight edge over these horses in terms of what he did over the summer at 400 yards, winning the Vessel's Maturity by a length of three quarters, and the Go-Let-Him-Go by 2.5 lengths. So again, those weren't fields as strong as this, but the performances themselves were brilliant. He's a really nice racehorse through and through.
How compromising is the rail for Bomb Cyclone?
No, it's the other way around, really. Bomb Cyclone loves the rail at Low Sal. He won the $2 million from there last December and did so just in the similar fashion in which Apolitical Pence won the Low Sal Championship in October. He was in front by a length quickly, but because of the optical illusion of the inside horse, when you watch a 400-yard, the bunch of race come down the stretch, they look like they're farther in front than that. Then what he does is he goes to Ruidoso, struggles a little bit with the season there in last of the summer, finished fourth in the All-American Derby. But he came back and won the Super Derby in the same manner that he won the $2 million. He won very well from the inside post. So they did the post position draws where the folks involved select, you know, where they want to be. And Odell, Christopher Odell, the trainer of Bomb Cyclone, was had an early choice. So he had a large selection of post positions to choose from. And he went for the rail. So I think he thinks this horse can be effective from the inside as much as ever. Chance for rain. Let's see it. I don't know if it's going to hit this far south compared to the, you know, 3 feet of snow they're going to get in the north in a few days' time. So the weather could play a factor. The biggest thing going against Bomb Cyclone is he's a three-year-old. And this is his debut against older horses. And as I mentioned a moment ago, Refrigerator in 91, he was a three-year-old that year, and he couldn't win. He was just a very good third, if I remember correctly. Bomb Cyclone's age is the biggest problem facing him in this race. He can do the 440. That's not a problem at all. Ran very well in his All-American trial, his first start of the year in August. But I'm just a little bit skeptical of what he can do against these more established older horses. So in that regard, that's going to be a tough assignment for Bomb Cyclone to keep pace with, you know, more experienced runners. This is only his 10th start. And, you know, when you look at others like Danger, this is his 32nd. And, you know, horses such as Apolitical Pence, well, this is race number 35 for him. So in that regard, he's got a tough assignment.
Well, it's the Champion of Champions, $750,000 Saturday night. And as big as it is, then Sunday rolls around.
The $2 million, which it actually has a purse of 1.8, it fluctuates a little bit. Last year, I think it was $2 more than $2 million. You know, it's a jackpot race, so it's predicated on what the owners and trainers pay into the nomination process as it goes forward, which is why there's changes in the purse. This is another interesting race. He's judge and jury who won the All American and appeared in all three of the major Ruidoso fraternities this summer. Is the first All-American winner to appear in the champion in the $2 million since No Secrets Here in 2006, and No Secrets Here finished third. So that's an interesting sidelight. And similarly to the way he's prepared Impressum, I think Heath Taylor has tried to get he's judge and jury as ready as he can for this race. He didn't run him after the All-American until the trials for the $2 million at the in late November. So he had a bit of a gap. He had the sixth fastest qualifying time. So he had a good time at 19.88 for 400 yards. Cyber Attack, trained by Chris Odell, full brother to Bomb Cyclone, is going to be the deserving favorite. He was beaten a nose by Party Politics in the Golden State Million at 400 yards on the first weekend of November. Came back and was an electric winner of the trial races at November 20th in 19.58 seconds. He's a $400,000 yearling purchase. Wow. It's one of the most expensive of the sale at Reynoso in Labor Day weekend in 2021. He's won half of his six starts. He got beat in the Rainbow Fraternity at Reynoso in July by 3/4 of a length. Didn't make the All-American because he grabbed a quarter out of that Rainbow Fraternity. So he's since come to Los Al, and his form is 1-2-1, and the two was a nose loss. So there's your favorite, and deservedly so, and might even be gone from right after the start, too, because just like his big brother, he's when he gets out of the gate and goes, he really does establish a gap between him and the other runners.
$1.8 million, $57,225, $2 million futurity.
So,
400 yards for the two-year-olds, and they've all gone 400, right?
Oh yes, they had their trial races, but you really need a little bit of a foundation at 400 to be effective at the distance. When you get into the autumn, when you're in the spring, you can get away with winning at 350, and no one really questions you. But there's a little bit more to it at 400 than there is at the others. Those two look like they're standouts. Jericho, trained by Taylor, was a trial race winner and was fourth in the Golden State Million. But he just seems to be maybe just a tick slower than some of the other runners in the field. And it looks to me like a two-horse race between Cyber Attack and he's judge and jury. And I expect those two to be the exact.
Los Alamitos, really the top racing nationwide these upcoming 2 days, the quarters at night, Saturday with the Starlet, Sunday the Soviet Problem, and Steve Anderson will be on hand. I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much. There's a lot going on up north, too. There's 23 races at Golden Gate on Friday and on Saturday and Sunday.
And
actually, 32 if you count. There's 32. 9 race program on Friday, 11 on Saturday, and 12 on Sunday to close the meeting. So, and there's 130 horses entered on Sunday. There's several also eligible lists, so there's not going to be that many runners. But everybody jumped in to close
That's
the
great.
Season there. It's really strong. And a really good Miss America Stakes on Sunday with a decent-sized field that I'm still studying this morning, by the way. So.
Well,
lots to look forward to up and down the state.
Well, and Steve, I'll be at Santa Anita Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and would love one of those mornings to catch you for sort of a little bit of an advance on the season. I'll be off. We're always off between Christmas and New Year's, so we thought we would do a little bit of a 23 preview for the Santa Anita winter meet.
Yeah, they have a big chance to have a big, I think they have a huge opening day on December 26th. If you're anywhere near Southern California, it's really worth the day out because it's, I think it's going to be one of their stronger programs of the meeting and certainly looks to be a bumper card with great stakes on both turf and dirt December 26th.
Steve, we should also mention, because I was busy, I didn't get to it yesterday, but saw that you wrote up the George Wolfe finalists for this year.
Yeah, Javier Castellano and four of his colleagues, including Edwin Maldonado, based in California. Terry Houghton is on the list as well. A good diverse group of men who've ridden nationwide. Almost, I think, going into Wednesday's day, the group collectively had 19,992 wins, just a few races away from 20,000 collectively.
Amazing.
And I think by the end of this weekend, or even in the early next week, they'll as a club, a little group will hit that 20,000 mark because they're the sort of guys who do win races on a regular basis. So kind of a fascinating statistic about the Wolf Award, which is, really a prize that I think is looked upon among the jockeys nationwide as one of high respect and personal character and racing accomplishments both factor into the ballot and, one that really means a lot to riders nationwide.
Well, and it's one of those unique awards that is voted upon by peers, and so
yeah.
it means that much more. Javi, Danielle Castellano, and Terry Houghton, Edwin Maldonado, and my man Willie Martinez. I love Willie being nominated for the Wolf Award, and he's in the twilight. I mean, he's the first to admit he's about. he's about a half a step from stepping into a business with his father-in-law, and so this might be the chance to give Wilfredo the hardware.
Yeah, it's like you look at it and you go, well, he deserves it. And you look at it and you go, well, this, look at this.
Well, they all do. Yeah, they wouldn't have been on the.
What about this fella? And you're like, well, they can't give five away. But I'll tell you one thing. Whoever wins it, I think, will be
always
very proud to get it because it's going to be a deserving honor. So it's kind of good in its own way. So.
And I don't want to end this on a sad note, but earlier in the week you did report on the illness that claimed Cairo Memories, and I haven't had a chance to mention that.
It was a tough article to write. Having followed her from the day she started closely for no reason other than the fact that I was impressed with some of her early season 2-year-old races, that was saddening to realize that she became ill after she was sent back to Kentucky with the intent of being sold in the big sales at the first of the month in November. That Breeders' Cup Juvenile Phillies Turf that Pizza Bianca won, she was a very deserving winner of that race. And I've always thought that was one of those races that if you put him back in the gate 5 minutes later and ran him, you might get a different result because there were so many good fillies that were in that field who had tough trips. I mean, there were like 9 of them within 3 lengths at the wire. And Cairo Memories was one of those who had a little bit of an unlucky journey. I always thought she might have been a little bit better than that. They caught up with her with the Belmont Oaks when she was 5th against the international field at 1.25 miles. But remember, she was 2nd in the Starlet last year, the best dirt race of her career, when she challenged a Baffert filly right to the line, too. So there was a lot of ability there. She won 2 grade 3s consecutive starts at Santa Anita in the spring. And it was also 3rd in the grade 1 Del Mar Oaks. So there was a lot of class to her. And it was a sad circumstance when she was lost to illness just a few weeks ago.
To kind of round this out, too, some of the news from the week that we were so absorbed at over at the symposium. I think we're going to have a visit with Bill Nader next week when he comes back from Hong Kong, and the recently named TOC head, and the story about Jonathan Wong and Tommy Town. Tommy Town's going to continue to breed in California, but the move from a racing standpoint, it's got to be a little unsettling for people,
particularly in the north, because the Wong Tommy Town have runners every day. And good runners and quality horses up and down the list, but also a lot of contenders. And Wong, let's be clear, has replaced Jerry Hollendorfer as the dominant trainer at Golden Gate Fields. He's won the last 14 training titles at the non-fair meeting there since the beginning of 2019. He's on his way to winning the title for this weekend as well, the last I saw. So that's difficult for that circuit to lose such a leading competitor. Let's see how this plays out over time. Let's see what the Tommy Town breeding operation looks like in this year, and then more importantly in 2024, which really isn't far away, and see what their commitment is and also what they want to do with the property. You know, it's one of the most highly rated equine thoroughbred properties in the state. It's right in the middle of a wonderful area in the Santa Ynez Valley up near Solvang and Paso Robles up in that area there. That's a good horse community area, but it's also vineyard country. And that's a concern with some people that I spoke to quietly or in the middle of the week, is that, you know, in time, not suggesting anything, but in time, if that property were available on the market, who would buy it? Would it be a horse person? Would it be a thoroughbred person? Or would it be somebody who goes, you know what, I see a Pinot Noir in the future here? And that's something that has to be at least addressed, even if it's a sensitive subject that racing may or not want to talk about. But that, if that farm were to be lost as a thoroughbred venue, it would be a huge strike against California thoroughbred breeding. Let's hope that for the sake of the sport, that things work out in favor for long-term racehorses on that property.
Steve Anderson, everybody, as good as there is, DRF Anderson. Steve, I'll see you tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Thanks again.
Steve Anderson, folks, just a pleasure. He's just amazing. He does such great work for the Daily Racing Forum. We're a little past the bottom of, are we? Yeah, we're a little bit just past the bottom of the hour. Scott Shapiro is going to join us, and I think we're going to head to Florence, y'all, as the water tower tells you. And actually, you know, since we're going to venture into Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati region, the tri-state area, I saw a piece of news this morning. For those of you that are of, you know, a certain age, meaning around my age, and enjoyed the and have, you know, forever enjoyed the music scene in and around Cincinnati. Really sad news for those of you, and you've heard me talk about the Warsaw Falcons before, and my friendship, particularly with Doug Wagner, the drummer, but the whole band, including John Schmidt, with a great bassist, of course his brother, a famed jazz pianist, and Dave Brown. And Dave Brown apparently yesterday passed, and I guarantee that those of you listening that, you know, particularly if you went to UC and would go to Dollar Bills and to Corey's and any of the places that the Falcons played up in Mount Adams, there can't be anybody that ever went to hear live music in and around Cincinnati that didn't see Dave Brown at one time or another. I mean, just a great guitar player and a great songwriter and had a great vocal styling too. So really saddened by that news. And I will mention the Tina and I went to Cincy. I hadn't seen Doug and John and Dave play in ages, in years. And Tina and I dragged Tina. Right before pandemic, we flew for a weekend, and she had not met Doug and Patty, and I'm so glad now that she got a chance to see the Falcons. I mean, a part of my experience in Cincinnati that, you know, just was really, really special, and you know, have had a lasting friendship going back to the 80s. So, Dave Brown, Scott Shapiro, good morning.
Anytime we lose people, it's certainly sad, but musicians, kind of outside of close friends and family, always tough ones, such big parts of some of our lives that are into music. So yeah. My condolences.
No, I appreciate that. And that's for everybody that, you know, that anybody that appreciates a local music scene. And, you know, that, I mean, they're vibrant everywhere, but that was a special early 80s for me, and then every time I'd get back to, you know, get back to Cincinnati, I mean, so many great times, some of which I remember.
I was going to say, I think I remember some of my great times in the world, but some of them, you know, a little blurrier than others.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly right. Too funny, too funny. Well, one of the great venues. For years, I know, right? Cincinnati Magazine, I think, or the Kentucky Post, somebody named Turfway Park as one of the great the bargain nights. They used to have the bargain Friday nights as one of the great date night options in the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky area, and of course now the refashioned Turfway Park. And you've been right on it.
I have. It was a packed house, I think overly packed house, last Friday for the first Friday of the new opening with fans, of course. And we're back at it there tonight. And if people hadn't heard, we're not running the Turfway tomorrow because
right.
There's music there. We're running on Sunday instead. So a little bit of a one-off situation there. But the rest of things remain the same, and we still have the in terms of Turfway, we still have the daily Double Down promotion, which is through in December, Fridays and Saturdays at Twin Spires. However, we did call the audible and move it to Sunday for those keeping track, and that's where you unlock 50% bonus on the daily double payouts if you hit more than one on the card. So good promotion that I've been diving into, or I did last week, and we'll continue to do so.
Well, and we'll look at the Sunday, the the shifted Sunday card, which is just ridiculous. 12 by 11 by 12 by 12 by 12 by 10 by 12 by 12.
Yeah, good field sizes. And I mentioned it on Twitter. I think, when, you know, a lot of people, obviously the field sizes is appealing, and then you combine it with the fact that just the way the, you know, the racing over the all weather takes place. And, you know, maybe you could say this for any surface, but there does seem to be a lot of troubled trips that maybe might be a little subtle. I mean, I think everybody at this point can find the real troubled trips with replays being so out there for everybody. But there are some troubled trips that are not getting recognized in the running lines in the charts. So if you're a trip player, trip handicapper like myself, definitely worth going back over those videos as opposed to just trusting the charts. And there's just a lot going on in some of these races with those awesome field sizes. So I just wanted to throw that out there for those that may not, you know the product that well. And, you know, the all weather can be, you know, great for some, and some don't like it as much. It took me a little while to get used to it and be in on it, but I definitely think it's a product that can provide some good video analysis type horses.
Well, and you know, we talked after opening week, and the train pulled out of the station, Scott, fairly straightforward, and a lot of formful results, if not, you know, not necessarily all favorites, but, you know, some very logical winners. What have we looked at here, you know, over the last several days, in fact, going into, even going back to last week? I don't know if I mentioned the other inaugural, the holiday inaugural winner.
Right.
I'm sure it's piled here somewhere, but it was, you mentioned Stidham and the Leal Homebred, Ready to Venture, second choice, because Thundering Creed really did not lift a hoof. Yeah.
I don't know what happened there with Thundering Creed. That horse was just hammered. I thought we would get an okay price. Got hammered like she couldn't lose, and got a pretty good race shape that day. Like you said, the winner ended up being the second choice for Stidham, you know, was off the pace. So it wasn't as if they crawled on the front end and she didn't have a fair race shape. She just really didn't pick up her feet. But yeah, getting back to your overall assessment, it was overall pretty formful. The first week, you know, like you said, nothing, there were some prices, but just ordinary. But man, on Wednesday night, things got crazy late. Just big price after big price, and not only big prices on top, but big prices underneath, some massive payouts led to a full carryover in the single six. The pick four, the late pick four, there were three horses paying three of four. I mean, none of them won, but that just gives you an idea of the chaos. Yesterday was a little more back to normal. Wasn't easy, but wasn't crazy. So we did see a little more of the chaotic results that a lot of people maybe over expect, but have seen quite a bit of at Turfway, making it difficult to connect the dots.
Well, I had not seen the Wednesday results, and I'm just dialing back here to take a peek. And 32-1, Lilies for Millie, the 2-year-old maiden winner, 11-1, 14-1. So that, boy, that pick three, I should pull those charts up and see the pick three. One thing that's notable here these first couple of weeks, just looking at the overall numbers, and the wins are spread out. I mean, a lot of single winners, a lot of horsemen have already, you know, got a toehold here and are off the duck early. And, you know, Maker's got three wins from 16 starts, and Paulo Lobo, two wins, Stidham, two, Bill Cowens, three winners. And Joe Davis has got two, Kim Hammond's got two, but, I mean, lots and lots of people have already won races. Jamie Grubbs with a pair of wins. Wins have been spread out.
Yeah, spread out. Nobody kind of running away with anything. They kind of separate the December meet from the winner in terms of titles there. But one guy that I expect to heat up that's gotten off to a little slow start and has been kind of cold overall the last several months here in Kentucky, but that's Billy Morey, who heading into this meet was, I think, 28% over the last several years at Turfway. He got a win yesterday, I believe it was, and I expect those to come soon. But yeah, like you said, a lot of parity, if you will. And good to see horsemen from kind of all over, you know, whether it be Belterra, Horseshoe Indianapolis shipping in, of course, the Kentucky-based horses, but getting a share of those big juicy Turfway Park pools, purses, I should say.
Well, and then on the jock side, Gerardo Corrales is just a sensation. I don't know how else to describe him. He's got 12 wins from 37 mounts. And Joe Ramos, 7 for 33. How about that?
Yeah, he's been riding very well. Not as familiar with him as I am with Gerardo Corrales, who, like you said, is sensation. He just kind of has a great feel for any course, but really has a good feel for the Turfway Park course. But yeah, Ramos, who does most of his work at Horseshoe Indianapolis, has really gotten off to a good start, and good to see that. Chris Landeros with some winners, of course, with Brad Cox's son, Bryson Cox, now having his book. Yeah, Corrales is going to be a very tough customer to catch in any sort of way as the leading jockey. And, you know, I probably said this a couple times already, but you're not paying attention to him year round, you're doing it wrong, because he can ride with anybody.
Big time. And of course, one thing that hasn't come up yet, just because Oaklawn's starting today, Rafi Bejarano taking leave of Kentucky and going to ride this winter at Oaklawn, and he's in search essentially of a Derby horse. So look for Rafi down there, as opposed to his long-running riding tack at Turfway in the winters. So that's notable. So that'll open up some opportunity for some other riders. All right, let's what do we got? Let's dive in.
To Sunday or tonight?
Yeah, do tonight first. Let's do it chronological.
Yeah, I've got a couple for tonight that I like. Race 5, the first of them, starts the late pick 4, two-year-old maiden special. And the two favorites in there make some sense. Number 4, Olazabal, second start off the claim for Eric Foster, who claimed for $75,000, is protected in each of the last couple starts, as well as retained, who was claimed by Ethan West for 50, now moved up in class, has been scratched in a couple of spots, maybe waiting to get this one up to the all-weather. But I thought number 10, Santorini, was a bit intriguing in here. The son of Twirling Candy, second time out for Rudy Brisset. Rudy's 24% with two-year-old second-time starters, 264 ROI over the last 63 starters. And Swan exits a good race at Keeneland. The winner was Victory in Formation, who came back to win for Brad Cox. Released McCracken, finished second, was impressive in his next start for Brett Calhoun, winning at Churchill. And this one was 4 wide on the backstretch, chasing those horses, and just really gave it up. And a little bit discouraged by the fact that there was just no finish at all. But the fact that he showed speed against a good bunch, I thought, was encouraging. I think this is a much softer bunch. So I don't know if we'll get the 10-1 morning line, but I like number 10, Santorini, a $275,000 Keeneland purchase from last September.
Jack Gilligan for Rudy Brisset on number 10 in the 5th, Santorini. Goes off at 7:55 tonight.
And then we'll back it up and maybe even get involved, of course, with the Daily Double promotion that I just spoke of. But I like a price in the 6, which is a optional claimer for fillies and mares at 6.5 panels. Number 6, Praise and Honor, pretty intriguing to me. Second start off the pretty lengthy layoff for Todd Beatty, who only has started one runner so far at Turfway, but brings this pricey Daughter of Honor coat in. I think shook off the rust at Presque Isle last time in a similar type spot. Was involved early and tired late. 2 back, which was last December, basically a year ago to the day. It was last December 9th. This horse ran down Red Ghost, who was the heavy favorite in the lane, grinded that one up at 10-1. So that's the only start she's had over the surface. She's got Joe Rocco Jr. aboard, and I think she's got the tactical speed to sit just off the early pace, which I think could be the right trip here. And she's 10-1 on the line. Praise and Honor. Actually, I made that my best play of the day when you combine the likelihood of winning and the morning line odds, or what I expect the odds to be at least.
Very nice. Praise and Honor. Joe Rocco Jr. for Todd Beatty. And there's a pricey double. We're going to go 10-6 in the 5th and the 6th. That goes off at 8:25 Eastern. And for those that are hanging around and looking at this card, excuse me, the feature tonight And I'm curious if you've got a horse that you like in here, because Bluegrass Parkway and Kazan mix it up in here. Mike Maker with Bluegrass Parkway, the 5-2 favorite. 7-2 for Kazan. Jonathan Wong with Carinos aboard. Argentello in here for Connor Murphy. This is a very, very nice. And listen, it's a $74,000 allowance, and they're going to go a mile and a quarter. As Tyler Picklesheimer told you last week in advance of the start of the season, he runs these mile and a quarter events on a regular basis. This is an interesting group.
Yeah, I wanted to be more creative than I ended up being in here, because I don't think Bluegrass Parkway, who is the 5-2 morning line favorite, ran very well last time and didn't have much of an excuse on November 24th against Better at Churchill. Not that much better. And that was Mike Maker was really running hot at that point of the fall at Churchill, and really just no excuse. And then you have Kazan, who was claimed by Wong out of a race at Golden Gate for $25,000, thought enough to bring him to race in the marathon on the Breeders' Cup undercard, and was 45-1, but man, this horse did no running that day. So now they drop back in class and get back to a more preferred surface. I did land on Kazan. I think the class drop will benefit. I mean, I thought it kind of as a sign of confidence that they were willing to claim that one and run right in that grade two. Maybe just didn't take to the Keeneland surface, which we've seen a lot, but not an overly confident opinion, but I do think Kazan and Bluegrass Parkway are the likeliest, unfortunately, even though I don't trust them.
Argentello,
is he the same horse?
That's a fair question.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely races to go back to, and if there's some pace, I mean, he can really come running, but they dropped in for 50 at Kentucky Downs off a layoff and didn't do all that much running, so I just have concerns, but I did pick for third, just kind of figure pick up some pieces at the very least.
I like Connor Murphy.
Good trainer.
Yeah, I like Connor Murphy.
Yeah.
What do we know? What do we know about Jane Elliott?
I mean, I saw her ride a little bit at Churchill, just a few mounts. We interviewed her once, and she came over from the UK, I believe. Yeah. I haven't seen enough of her to have a real strong opinion of, and she's not getting the strongest of mounts, but this is a pretty good mount. I've seen her get, you mentioned Vejerano, but a lot of people can really use this Turfway Park meet to kind of propel themselves into barns that they might not be able to get into if they, go elsewhere. And Vejerano was a great example. When he came from California, he stayed here in the winter and built up a lot of business, and it ended up turning into, a really good decision for him. And you see a lot of people, a lot of jocks doing the same. You know, the purses are good and the barns are here to ride for that will be around year round in Kentucky.
Well, we'll have to watch for her. All right, on to Sunday.
I think Kid Chalene is a potential, a horse to lean on in the finale. It's a $30,000 maiden claimer. Shook off the rust last time out at Turfway off a 14-month break. Went one turn, 6.5 furlongs. Cipriano Contreras brings him back quickly, stretches back out, get a favorable inside draw. Tough to trust an 0-for-12 horse at a likely relatively short price, but it looks like it should be graduation day.
All right, let's take a look at Sunday.
Okie doke. We'll go to the back half on this one as well. The fifth is pretty interesting, a race where both the fifth and the sixth are maiden events. The sixth special weights. The fifth is 2-year-old fillies. The sixth is 3-year-olds and up. And I think both of them have a little bit of a chance for a price. In the fifth, a couple interesting runners. Number 9, Nom de Plume, debuts for Paulo Lobo, daughter of Uncle Mo. Some pretty sneaky good pedigree, a half to a couple horses that, weren't stakes type horses, but that next tier below here in Kentucky, Shadow Matter, who finished second on debut for Dallas Stewart and then won the second start, earned almost $300,000 at this point, half to that one, and also a half to Movie Moxie, who hit the board in his first 10 starts, took to his fourth to win one, but $207,000 earner. So thought that one on debut with the aforementioned Joe Ramos at 6-1 was interesting. And then number 10 is Miss JD. The damn Paquita Coqueta won the 2017 Miss Direction out of Santa Anita. And this one really lost all chance at the start, trying the dirt on November 23rd at Churchill. Made a middle move before tiring badly. But the pedigree screams turf, so I think the move to the all-weather will benefit, as will the start. And Sarah Hamilton is having a pretty good run of it this year. She won with one of those big price horses on Wednesday, and also won her first race at Churchill within the last month. So I thought those two were a little intriguing in the fifth.
All right.
And then in the sixth, speaking of horses I don't trust, you have the two morning line favorites. Number 8, Bourbon Heist, is 9-5, and number 9, Charleston Strong, is 5-2. Combined, they're 0-22. Bourbon Heist, I mean, this is a horse that thought had a bright future and just has found so many ways to lose. You wonder how much it's impacted his confidence. And then Charleston Strong is moving up in class for Maker after some underneath finishes in New York and Florida. But I'm going to look to the outside runner, a first-time starter, number 10, Park Place. Was a purchase at the Keeneland Horses of Racing, Horses of All Racing sale earlier this year. 125 grand, Son of Mastery. Debuts for Michael McCarthy, the half to positive Phil, who won on debut at Gulfstream Park West. And McCarthy doesn't have a lot of runners in Kentucky, but seems to send out mostly live ones. It gets Chris Landeros here at 12-1, I thought was intriguing.
Well, and what's intriguing about him is, you know, being purchased, you know, last month,
right,
is that Paul Redham bought him, and as if Paul Redham, you know, needs to be adding stock. So
right,
there's got to be something to this horse. I mean, and he's got, you know, it's funny, he had a nice string of works leading up to the sale, and there's got to be an interesting backstory to this horse.
I thought so too. I don't have that backstory, but interesting. Was working at the Windstar Farm for months, and then now appears in the McCarthy Barn. And I don't know. I mean, I know he's got a few horses with Redham Racing, but
holy
not many,
cow!
So,
well, here's part of the story.
Okay.
This was a $510,000 yearling that sold at Keeneland in book. What would have been book two, and. Or actually, might have been book one, day two, and to Maverick Racing, to the Windstar operation. And something obviously went amiss, and from a physical standpoint, and so they threw him into the HORA sale, and he fetched $125,000 from Dennis O'Neill. So Dennis picked this out for the Redhams. This is you know, that this was a $500,000 yearling, and he's a colt too. They didn't geld him.
Yep.
So very interesting. Park Place.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, you know, and if you're spreading out, I mean, I'm going to try to beat the favorites. You know, that horse doesn't have to win. I thought he was the most intriguing, but it's just a race where it looks like a couple horses that really have struggled to win are going to take the lion's share.
Oh,
the
yeah,
money.
There's career maidens in there that are ugly.
Right.
I'll also tell you that this is a Phipps family, you know, female family. The second dam is Pleasant Home, the distaff winner. so there's for those of you that were there at whatever crazy price she was, 30-1. How much was she? She was some ridiculous price. That was a crazy winner of I think even Shug Shug was shocked,
surprised, right?
Exactly.
Right.
All right,
and then the last one is the Mike Charmer, which is the stakes race.
Yep.
On the Sunday card, 125 grand, fillies and mares, mile and a 16th, and a little more formful in here with number 1 Kate's Kingdom, the second choice on the morning line. This horse, really impressive effort, I thought, at Keeneland against grade 3 foes on October 22nd, running down our flash drive, who was the even money favorite, came back to win in a grade 2 at Woodbine by almost 6 lengths. And this horse just ran her down. I mean, she didn't really stop. So I think we know that the all-weather surface is to her liking. She's in the William Walden Barn now, and Will Walton has had made a real good impression with limited starters thus far in Kentucky, both at Churchill, Keeneland, and then, you know, now at Turfway. So I think Kate's Kingdom should get an honest pace and should be able to run him down as the second choice. We'll see if the 3-1 holds. Burning Ambition is the 5-2 favorite.
More Jack Gilligan. Very good. All right. The one in the feature, you're also notably going to see Sunday afternoon racing. It's a 12:45 post Sunday. So look for Turfway for those that are going to look on Saturday and say, where's Turfway? Sunday. So while you're watching some football, you can take in the action with the opportunity to get the bonus, Twin Spires, on the doubles. Shap, I appreciate it. Good luck. I'll talk to you from Remington next week.
Sounds good. Just real quick, Steve, I wanted to let people know about the Los Alamitos leaderboard contest.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Good job. Running. Good job.
Yeah, it's one of these contests, $10 win bets. You have to opt in like all of our promotions. You get a $10 win bet on each. You don't have to bet every race, but your first $10 win bet on each race will earn you points on the leaderboard. There's two separate competitions, week one and then week two. You get 100 points for first, 50 points for second, and 25 points for third. And, you know, the winner of the standings each week will get each of the 2 weeks. First will be 1,000, second 500. But all the details, as always, on twinspires.com on the offers tab or on the offers tab on the app. So check that out. A really fun promotion there at Los Al to support them over the next couple of weeks.
Well, and, of course, leaderboard also one of our favorites, leading along with the points system toward Derby. Scott,
starting soon.
Yeah, keep an eye out, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, Steve. Enjoy your weekend, sir.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. There's Shap, we'll take our second break of the morning and come back with Nick Tamaro. We'll do some New York. Hammer will swing through. We'll get Hammer on, and he's probably listening in and working on his graded state committee workbooks. You want to talk about homework? That's the ultimate homework. A stack of these notebooks that they all go through in anticipation of the graded state committee meetings, and a Friday visit from Seth Merrow. Can't have a week go by without a little Seth. He's going to do some Tampa. I think he said he looked at Tampa, Oaklawn, and Aqueduct. He's got some plays, all right, for the weekend. Back after this, Nick joins us. Hammer. And Seth. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? NairaBets.